Coming up on the show today, heavy fighting in Israel and Gaza continues.
Blinken said he plans to meet with leaders in the region to try to prevent spreading of violence that has claimed at least 2,800 lives on both sides.
Plus, we visit a village on Israel's northern border.
Hezbollah is just a few kilometers from here.
And their military outpost can be seen from the Israeli side of the border. One local worker tells us he sometimes can also see fighters across the fence.
And later, a close look at upcoming elections in Poland. Today is Friday, October 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. A developing story out of New York, where Stephane Dujarric, the UN spokesperson, says that just before midnight local time on Friday morning, October 13th, team leaders of the UN Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs and the Department of Safety and Security in Gaza were informed by their liaison officers in the Israeli army that the entire population north of Wadi should relocate to southern Gaza within the next 24 hours. This amounts to approximately 1.1 million people. The same order applied to all UN staff and those sheltered in UN facilities, including schools, health centers, and clinics. The UN considers it impossible for such a movement to take place without devastating humanitarian consequences, and the UN strongly appeals for any such order, if confirmed, to be rescinded, avoiding what could transform what is already a tragedy into a calamitous situation. The Israeli envoy to the UN calls the UN's reaction to their announcement shameful. We begin today, though, with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He was in Israel on Thursday to hold meetings with senior Israeli officials in response to the crisis triggered by Saturday's brutal attacks by Hamas. Blinken says that he plans to show solidarity with Israel, but will also seek to prevent the conflict from spilling over into the greater Middle East. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the story.
Israelis have begun to bury the dead, including this man who was killed during the fighting at the Be'eri kibbutz in southern Israel. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spent the day in Israel meeting with top officials, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and Israelis grieving the loss of their loved ones. Blinken said he arrived in the country not just as a U.S. diplomat, but also as a Jew, father, and husband. In this moment where he said the suffering is hard to fathom.
The message that I bring to Israel is this. You may be strong enough on your own to defend yourself, but as long as America exists, you will never ever have to. We will always be there by your side.
Blinken said he plans to meet with leaders in the region to try to prevent spreading of violence that has claimed at least 2,800 lives on both sides, and to try to win the release of some 150 hostages Hamas is still holding.
From here, I'll go on to Jordan, where I'll meet with His Majesty King Abdullah and with Palestinian Authority President Abbas. And then over the coming days, we'll visit with leaders in Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Qatar.
As Israel continued to pound Gaza City with airstrikes, Blinken said he and Israeli leaders discussed ways to address the humanitarian needs of Gaza residents. Blinken said he also planned to bring up the possibilities for safe passage of civilians out of Gaza during meetings with regional leaders in the coming days. Israel is gathering massive forces, tanks, and other heavy armor around the occupied Palestinian territory as it continues its retaliatory campaign against what Prime Minister Netanyahu called the sheer evil of terror attacks by Hamas. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
As mentioned, Secretary Blinken is trying to prevent the conflict from widening. He's got his work cut out for him. Syria has accused Israel of carrying out missile strikes on airports in Damascus and Aleppo on Thursday. News of the strikes come as there are growing fears that the conflict between Israel and Hamas could spiral into a regional war. Henry Ridgewell has the story.
Israel has mobilized up to 360,000 reservists following the attack by Hamas militants. Hundreds of tanks have been positioned at the border with the Gaza Strip. A ground invasion appears imminent. Iran is a major supporter of Hamas, and there are fears that the attack could spiral into a broader conflict in the region. Barbara Slavin is from the Stimson Center in Washington.
If Israel is going to mount a ground invasion of Gaza, I think there is real concern that these other groups that have gotten Iranian support and that share Iran's goals and share Iran's animosity toward Israel, that they might get involved as well.
That includes Hezbollah, a powerful militant group based in Lebanon and backed by Iran. Israeli forces have exchanged sporadic rocket fire with Hezbollah fighters in recent days. Syria said Thursday that Israeli missiles had targeted airports in Damascus and Aleppo, damaging their runways. Israel did not comment, but has previously accused Syria of facilitating arms shipments from Iran to militant groups in the region. In the wake of the Hamas attack, Israeli politicians, riven by bitter internal divisions, have formed a unity government. That may give pause to the country's foes, says former U.S. Middle East envoy Dennis Ross.
I don't rule out the possibility there'll be an all-out war, although Hezbollah was counting on divisions in Israel, and I think they've seen what they were thinking about Israel in terms of divisions is no longer the case. So that may also temper their interest in all-out war. And as I said, Iran may have an interest in keeping Hezbollah in reserve in the event that they think they may be attacked.
Israel could seek to expand its strikes against Iran's allies and proxies beyond Gaza. Benam Ben Taleblu is from the Federation for Defense of Democracies in Washington.
There's always the potential for Israel to strike elsewhere, of course, not just Lebanon, which would invoke a third Lebanon war, but potentially the widening of what is already underway between Israel and Iran indirectly, which is the war between the wars, the cyber element, the maritime element.
But Israel is unlikely to attack Iran directly, says analyst Lina Khatib.
Because this would already stretch resources that this war have shown to be stretched in Israel at the level of intelligence, for example.
Meanwhile, the United States has sent an aircraft carrier fleet to the region. President Joe Biden said it was a warning to Iran that they should, in his words, be careful. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Afghanistan's Taliban has blocked earthquake-related relief assistance from Pakistan because of a social media post by Pakistan's prime minister. The post implied that Afghanistan had asked for assistance after the deadly earthquake, while Afghan officials maintain they made no such requests. And singer Rudolph Isley, one of the founding members of the influential R&B group the Isley Brothers, died at his home in Chicago. The Isleys were responsible for many hits, but perhaps their most enduring was 1959's Shout. Isley was 84.
You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout, throw my hands up and shout, throw my head back and shout, come on now.
This is Science in a Minute.
A rare astronomical event called an annular solar eclipse will be taking place on Saturday, October 14th. This event is also being called the Ring of Fire Eclipse. A Ring of Fire Eclipse takes place when the moon appears slightly smaller than it does during a normal eclipse when it passes in front of the sun. This will make the sun look like a ring of fire in the sky when in totality. The moon will look smaller than usual because it is at its farthest orbital point from Earth, or apogee. People in parts of the western United States, Central and South America are expected to lie within the path of a total eclipse, while those who are just outside of this trajectory will witness a partial eclipse. NASA says a full or at least partial eclipse will be visible throughout the continental United States. Rick Pantaleo, VOA News.
From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. Still to come, Russian President Vladimir Putin is traveling. We'll find out where to and why in just a moment. But up first, Polish voters face a choice in parliamentary elections set for October 15th. They're likely to have a significant impact not only on a deeply polarized Polish society, but also on the future of Europe as a whole. For more insight, Kim Lewis speaks with VOA's Mirosława Gongadze. She's in Warsaw, Poland, covering the elections.
So it appears this is going to be a close race between the ruling right-wing Law and Justice Party and the opposition Civic Coalition for seats in the two-house 460-member parliament. Is this a surprise?
It is indeed a very close race. The Civic Coalition trails the Law and Order and Justice Party by just several percentage points in the polls. The Law and Justice Party came to power in 2015, and they are governing Poland for 8 years. So it is very logical that a big part of the population is looking for change. The opposition is trying to galvanize its voters to come and vote to change the government. And the Civic Coalition bloc, headed by Donald Tusk, he's 66 and former president of the European Council and the former Polish prime minister, he pledged to revise the judiciary's amendment that Law and Justice Party proposed. He promised safeguard media independence and protect civil liberties. The Tusk coalition assert that it will work to restore Poland's international reputation as a democratic nation and rebuild its cooperative relationship with the EU, particularly with Germany, which has faced strong criticism from the current government in the recent months. At the same time, Law and Justice Party are claiming that they fulfilled their promises and are ready to govern one more term. That would be a very unique political situation to govern for three terms.
Looking at the people, what do the people of Poland want?
People of Poland are concerned about their security and well-being, but they are very divided. There is 10 million pensioners in Poland. It's a quarter of the population. So they just want to maintain their pensions and have free healthcare as Poland has. For the younger generation, these elections are about civil liberties and free choices that they would like to make. These elections will be critical for the direction of Poland as a democratic state and basically direction of Europe as a whole.
The political force that comes out as the winner, what will they have to do regarding the support of Ukraine?
According to analysts I have talked to, Civic Platform can score, we talked about possible coalition, right? So the Civic Platform can score enough votes to form a parliamentary majority in partnership with other forces like Poland's New Left. Alternatively, Law and Justice most likely will form the coalition with far-right Confederation Party. Initially, due to the war in Ukraine and Russian aggression, there was a rare moment of national unity in Poland with widespread agreement on supporting Ukraine and against the Russian aggression. However, consensus has eroded during this election campaign. The Law and Justice Party, as analysts say, is adjusting its rhetoric, particularly in terms of Ukraine, to feed off competition from the far-right Confederation, who are perceived as pro-Russian. Additionally, there is a crisis in agricultural imports, especially grain delivery in rural areas, which is influencing the ruling party messaging. The member of the current government and special envoy for Ukraine, Jadwiga Emilewicz, told me in recent interview that at the start of the war, 38 million Poles were standing face to face with Ukrainians and helping them and opening their homes. And today, she said, it does not matter whether Poles will vote for Law and Justice or Civic Platform. They feel a bit disappointed and even offended sometimes, being treated, as she points, not very seriously by the Kyiv partner.
That's VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze. She's speaking with my colleague Kim Lewis. U.S. President Joe Biden is facing several challenges in his 2024 re-election bid, and one of them is rather surprising for a Democrat. We'll find out what that is coming up in a little bit. Now, though, we look to Central Asia, where Russia's president has arrived in Kyrgyzstan on a rare trip abroad. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
President Vladimir Putin stood on a podium alongside his Kyrgyz counterpart, President Sadir Japarov, as a military band welcomed the Russian leader. It's the first time this year that Putin has travelled outside of Russia and Russian-held territories of Ukraine. Putin was indicted earlier this year by the International Criminal Court for war crimes in Ukraine. He came to attend the Commonwealth of Independent States Summit, which Kyrgyzstan is hosting. Leaders of Azerbaijan, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan will also attend the summit. I'm Karen Chamas.
Hollywood writers have ended their strike and many have returned to work. However, talks between Hollywood studios and the SAG-AFTRA Actors Union aren't going as well. Reuters' Olivia Zolino has more.
Negotiations between the SAG-AFTRA Actors Union and Hollywood studios broke down on Wednesday. The two sides clashed over streaming revenue, the use of artificial intelligence, and other issues. The three-month work stoppage, which has put most U.S.-based film and television productions on hold, has cost the California economy billions and left thousands of crew members out of work. The union resumed negotiations with studios last week after the Writers Guild of America ended its work stoppage. But the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, or AMPTP, said talks were suspended once it reviewed the most recent union proposal. In a statement, the group, which represents Netflix, Walt Disney, and other media companies, said, quote, "It is clear that the gap between the AMPTP and SAG-AFTRA is too great, and conversations are no longer moving us in a productive direction." In a letter to members issued early Thursday, SAG-AFTRA said it had negotiated in good faith with studios, quote, "despite the fact that last week they presented an offer that was shockingly worth less than they proposed before the strike began." One issue of contention is SAG-AFTRA's demand for a share of streaming revenue to be delivered as a bonus to cast members. The AMPTP put the proposal at a cost of $800 billion, a figure SAG-AFTRA says is overstated by 60%. The union also said studios, quote, "refused to protect performers from being replaced by AI." The AMPTP said it had promised to obtain actors' consent before using any digital replicas of their likenesses.
That's Reuters' Olivia Zolino reporting for us. And finally today, recent polls are showing softening support for President Joe Biden in his 2024 re-election bid among Black and Hispanic voters. While analysts stress that the shifts aren't extreme, in a close election, they could be pivotal. And the Biden campaign tells VOA that it's not taking any votes for granted. Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
When Democratic President Joe Biden was elected in November 2020, he had the support of more than 70% of non-white voters, the New York Times reported. But that support appears to be waning. A Times analysis shows Biden leading Trump by just 53% to 28% among the same voting group as of early September. The analysis is based on an aggregation of New York Times Siena College polls from 2022 and 2023, according to the Times. The daughter of Peruvian immigrants, Madeleine Bushi, favors Biden's re-election in 2024, but isn't surprised that some Hispanics are leaning toward voting Republican next year.
You know, Latinos are a little conservative. Like, if you hear in the news, everyone's talking abortion, you know, LGBTQ plus rights. And, you know, to our fault, our community is a little, you know, conservative about that. So I think Republicans are, they're doing a good job getting to them.
Analysts acknowledge the shift in voting patterns to the right is real, but with a word of caution. Omar Wasso is a political scientist at the University of California, Berkeley.
We're seeing some working class Hispanics and African-Americans who are more conservative sorting into the Republican Party. And that reflects this kind of ideological sorting that's been happening over decades.
Zoltan Heinl is a professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego.
We certainly haven't seen enough years of that shift to know, you know, where it's going in the future or whether it will persist.
Historically, about 90% of the black vote has consistently gone to the Democrats. But some black voters told VOA they are undecided about 2024. Lonnie Pursley is concerned about the economy.
Inflation is crazy right now, but we're not seeing a monumental increase in wages.
Denise Williams says there are unresolved social and economic inequities.
Health-wise, money-wise, it's not on, you know, the same scale as, you know, ones who are not of a minority group.
The Biden campaign maintains that the president's agenda is popular among blacks and Hispanics, and that efforts to communicate the administration's achievements to those communities in particular are in full swing. Spokesperson for the Biden campaign, Kevin Munoz.
We're not focused on every poll. We're focused on putting in the work to reach every community that's going to be decisive in this election. We know we can't take the Black or Latino vote for granted, and that's why we're putting historic investments early in on this campaign to reach every voter.
It's a $25 million communication effort, and it includes a series of digital TV and radio ads that since August have been targeting Hispanic and African American voters on battleground states. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
October 16th is World Food Day, an observance meant to raise awareness of global hunger and malnutrition, and to bring forth new ideas for boosting food security. It's a tall order. According to the UN's World Food Program, the world is experiencing the largest food crisis in modern history. Something about this global food crisis is different, said Dr. Kerry Fowler, the State Department's Special Envoy for Global Food Security. The number of food insecure people are greater. The crises seem to be more frequent. So we need some game-changing developments in agriculture and food security.
Food security fundamentally depends on fertile soils and adapted crops. Degraded soils and unadapted crops are never going to provide for food security.
That is why the United States, in partnership with the African Union and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, announced the Vision for Adapted Crops and Soils, or VACS. VACS aims to foster more resilient food systems by developing climate-resilient, nutritious crop varieties and building healthy, fertile soils, said Dr. Fowler. Initially, we're focusing back on Africa.
On soils, we seek to help African governments and farmers answer four fundamental questions, all of which require data and analysis that my government and our farmers here have, and which are mostly lacking in Africa.
The first question is, where to plant? The answer to that question will help governments to promote effective land use planning, said Dr. Fowler. Second question, what to plant, will help farmers and governments make good decisions to maximize productivity, resilience, and nutrition.
Third question, what management system to employ? That's where we have to integrate everything we know about the environment, the soils, the crop varieties, to help farmers make informed decisions. And the fourth question, how do we apply all that in a given year, in a given season? That's where we hope to expand the access to hyperlocal, timely recommendations to help farmers make the kind of management decisions in real time that they need to better manage their inputs, such as fertilizer.
Africa is a continent where precision agriculture is more needed than anywhere else in the world. The farmers need that kind of detailed scientific knowledge about their soils that good management, sustainable practices, and productive agriculture require, said Dr. Fowler. We need to think boldly. We need to act boldly. We need some game-changing developments in agriculture and food security. VACS may be that development.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.